65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. This is Spanning the State, and here are your hosts, Kristen Bry and Steve Scafidi.
Steve Scafidi, here. We got plenty to talk about. How are you doing today?
I am good. So yesterday,
how's your 401k today?
Oof, don't even ask. I looked yesterday just to see where my starting point was for this big decline. Yesterday was Liberation Day, according to President Donald J. Trump.
It was Liberation Day.
Maybe call it Recession Day, Inflation Day, hopefully not Depression Day.
We will see. We have plenty to talk about that. But yes, the most expansive tariffs yet. We'll start Saturday on all imports from cars to fashion, at least at 10%, but with 60 other countries, including ones that have a zero population of humans, but plenty of population of penguins, are getting new tariffs.
It sounds like a plan not well considered. Just my take.
We'll talk more about that later.
So I had a great interview on the show last week, my show, Todd Hirsch. I met him through a friend of a from high school, actually, my friend Marianne. He's a Canadian economist, author, and speaker. He's worked for the Bank of Canada, chief economist for Alberta-based bank. And he's going to he's joining us
on the
hotline right now. Good afternoon, Todd. Where are we hailing you from today?
Good afternoon to both of you. I am back home in Calgary after a lot of travel, but I'm in Calgary, Alberta today.
So what? I guess first I'll start with this. What's the reaction in Canada of this so-called Liberation Day announcement by the president? Big ceremony yesterday at the White House. I think it was in the Rose Garden or somewhere around there.
It was in the Rose Garden.
Yeah. What was the reaction in Canada?
Well, it's quite astounding, actually, because, you know, for months now, President Trump has been harping on Canada and 25% tariff, and we're a very bad offender, and, we, you know, fentanyl and all this craziness. And then yesterday, he pulls out his charts, and, you know, almost every country of the world is getting hit, but Canada. He didn't mention Canada. We didn't make the chart. And I thought for a minute this was maybe a clerical error or something. They didn't have one, you know, a line fell off the printing press or something like that. But Canada wasn't mentioned among the countries that are getting hit by tariffs yesterday. Now, there was a collective sigh of relief in Canada. There are still tariffs in place, 25% on autos, 25% on steel and aluminum. That's been in place now for a few weeks, but nothing new announced yesterday. In fact, it was announced that, you know, things that are covered currently under the CUSMA, that is the Canada-US-Mexico Free Trade Agreement, things currently under CUSMA will not be hit with tariffs. Now, while on the surface that is good news, I think it sort of continues the play of, you know, the agent of chaos. Like, what do you mean no tariffs? You've been talking about tariffs for months now, and on Liberation Day, no tariffs. So I think it was good news, but I don't think anyone in Canada is really taking this as we're completely off the hook. I think that there are still going to be some tweaks and adjustments, and, you know, who knows what we might be hit with.
And I think I asked you this last week, but economists, are they generally on one side or the other on the idea of tariffs? And at least my understanding, having read some of this stuff in the last, you know, few months of the Trump administration, is that economists aren't huge fans, or am I overstating that?
No, you are not overstating it. There are very few serious economists who would advocate tariffs. Tariffs, when they came down, and, you know, after the Second World War, global tariffs were largely responsible, that the elimination of tariffs, largely responsible for the prosperity that the global economy has seen over the last 70 years. Yes, there are adjustments. Yes, there are winners, and there are some pockets where people don't feel like they're winning. But overall, global prosperity has surged because tariffs have been eliminated. As of yesterday, you know, the president is rewriting the global trading rules, throwing us back into a time that we haven't seen since the 1930s, the beginning of the Great Depression, where tariffs are now sort of, you know, becoming more normal. So economists, generally speaking, do not like tariffs. They think there are much better ways to raise revenue, and this is really just hampering global economic activity.
Now, Todd, would there be a better way to do tariffs that actually could help the U.S. economy? Or is it because this is so chaotic, or is there a more strategic way that this could have been done to get to the end goal that's been stated?
Well, I think, you know, and when the president yesterday, he talks about different countries and they have been, I think he overstated saying you've been, you know, America has been cheated and raped and pillaged and all these outrageous words. I would agree that there have been countries that maybe haven't always been the fairest of free traders and maybe, in fact, have imposed tariffs on the United States when the United States, in fact, didn't have that same sort of tariff. He's not entirely wrong that way. But rather than just sort of taking a sledgehammer to the whole thing, I think that this would have been an opportunity for him to, you know, have negotiations with each individual country saying, hey, look, we actually don't think what you guys are doing is necessarily fair. Can we work this out? I think that was an approach that other presidents had. Certainly Barack Obama had this approach with China. Joe Biden had this approach with China. Donald Trump is not the first one to point out that there are some imbalances, so I'll give him that. But this sledgehammer approach, saying we're just going to go nuts and start imposing tariffs on the global economy, I don't think is necessarily the most helpful way to do it.
Canadian economist Todd Hirsch joining us on Spanning the State on 620 WTMJ. European Union leaders weighed in last night, early this morning in the United States, and they are banding together. Canada's sort of, it's not an island, but it's above the United States. It's a massive country. I don't know if it's bigger or small. Is it bigger than the United States?
I think the land mass is bigger.
Yeah, the land, obviously.
Land mass is a little bigger.
Yeah. But when you look at, like, the impact of the U.S. and our standing, standing's a great word because it talks about the image of our country and what we stand for. What do you think this sort of activity in the form of tariffs will do to the sort of the image and the standing of the United States across the world, including Canada?
You know, and this is where it's really kind of heartbreaking because, you know, most Canadians I know have always loved the United States. It's been a bit of a big brother sort of relationship, not in a surveillance kind of big brother way, but, you know, like they are our best friend. They are the ones that we do business with. This is where we like to vacation. We love American products. We love American TV and Netflix and all of it. But we feel a little betrayed. We feel a little bit of the trust in that relationship between Canada and the United States, which is for more than a century has been sort of the bedrock of our relationship, that trust. That trust has sort of been betrayed. And now we're not sure what to expect, you know, and it's hard to undo that, you know, any relationship. Once trust has been breached or compromised, it's hard sometimes to win it back. So I would say, you know, after we get over here in Canada, the, you know, maybe the five stages of grieving, you know, you go through denial and then you go through anger and bargaining and all these different things. But I think there is a profound sadness in Canada that, in fact, that relationship, that trust between our two countries has been broken.
We got to let you go, Todd, but I want to ask you one quick thing before we do that. Where do you think the storyline goes in the next week or 2 weeks? Is it as simple as saying, you remove yours, we'll take ours off?
Get out your crystal ball.
I always say, I don't have a crystal ball. It's more like a lava lamp. In other words, I can look into it, but things are always shifting and changing. Really hard to predict right now what's going to happen next. Again, I think that is maybe part of the president's style is sort of sowing chaos, and you know it keeps your opponents on their back foot because we just never know what to expect. I think it's sad that we're viewed as an opponent rather than as a cherished trading partner, but we are on our back foot. We don't know what to expect. We were a bit relieved yesterday that Canada wasn't singled out for high tariffs, but I don't think anyone in Canada is expecting that to be the end of the story.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. He is Todd Hirsch, a Canadian economist and speaker. We'll have to have you on as this develops even more.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Todd.
All right. Thanks so much. We'll be back more after this.
Not today, you can't, Kristen Bride.
You have no satisfaction today?
No. I'm not going to look at my 401k and my investments because it's going to be a bloodbath. And when you've been in it as long as I have been,
you've seen the ups and downs of everything.
Yeah,
but you're closer to retirement than I am. So I feel like it's one thing for me not to look at it. It's another thing for you to gauge when you're actually going to hang it up.
Yeah, and I don't want to diminish the impact because if folks are close to retirement or just retired and they still are pretty active in investing, this is an ouch moment. This is not a fun day. And I don't want to make light of it. I I'll just say this. I had Rick Esselberg on my show this morning, and, mm-hmm. and Rick is as conservative as they get. He is not a fan of any of this. He's blown up Donald Trump before on sort of base level politics stuff. It's not researched. It's not data driven. Most, as we just heard from Todd Hirsch, most economists don't believe in this stuff, but that's sort of that populist idea that some people, including voters, seem to like.
So I want to get back to the more actual policy strategic things that are happening in the Senate as far as bipartisan blocks yesterday talking to for the Canadian tariffs. There was also some movement today. I want to get back to that. But based on what you just said, I had this moment because some of the tariffs that came out yesterday for Heard and McDonald Island, which
stupid.
Is off the coast of Australia, has a zero person population.
You mean no trade?
lots of penguins.
Yeah, they don't trade, though.
But no people. And similar Norfolk Island also does no trade with U.S.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking about this because I feel like every time there's a big announcement like this, there is some kind of memeable thing that happens, right? And I've already seen lots of memes of there was someone who, I think this is the one that I reposted, of a penguin sitting in Zelensky's seat in the Oval Office and Vance and Trump mm-hmm. yelling at the penguin. But, you know, and I always wonder, do you think that is on purpose because we then in the media or on social media talk about like, oh, look how dumb it is or why would they do that? And it's like an Easter egg that's planted. Or do you think it's actually an oversight?
I think it's an oversight.
Okay.
And because I've heard that argument before that it's sort of a plant to see if we're paying attention. I've said for a long time, not a fan of Donald Trump. People know that if they listen to my show. But the fact that the way they're doing things, even with Doge, is like so simplistic that it doesn't like factor in any real data or any analytics or research so that they're making really dumb mistakes, including, you know, trying to tariff an island that has no people or trade on it. That's just stupid at its base. I mean, come on. That makes no sense.
Yeah. So let's take a break quickly. When we come back, we'll talk about what's happened in the Senate as far as some bipartisan agreement that Congress should maybe take back some power when it comes to these tariffs. Now, how much pressure would have to happen on House representatives for them to actually take this up?
Can you make Speaker Mike Johnson cry? That's the question. Can someone do that? I think it's possible. Hard, but possible.
So we'll talk about that on the other side of this. Welcome back to Spain the State. Steve Scafidi is here with me today.
And tomorrow.
And tomorrow. And then...
tomorrow.
I don't know if you're surprised by this, but yesterday I saw that the Senate voted to rescind some of Trump's tariffs, Canadian tariffs specifically. Then earlier this morning, senators introduced a bipartisan bill to grant Congress more power over instituting tariffs on other countries. Now, this is bipartisan agreement or, you know, initiative in the Senate.
One side of Congress,
and likely with Speaker Mike Johnson at the helm, won't have a lot of movement in the House unless, I don't know, if there continues to be this much pressure. We've seen some of the anger over at town halls, the anger over certain representatives not having town halls. And if that continues to swell, do you think that there could be enough pressure to may have some movement in the House?
Yes. I made this point at the very end of my show, and I believe this. If this puts us into recession, you can't point back at Joe Biden. This is the day and the change, tariffs, the leading part of that change, that did it. You have to own that if you're this administration. And if all those members of Congress, the Senate is always the grown-ups. There's only 100 of them. Congress, a lot of babies, a lot of crazy people, a lot of whatevers. They don't take a lot of what they do seriously anyway. So they're always like the junior in this argument, senior senator, junior House. So they, if they're getting enough heat, absolutely. But they cannot deflect anymore. This administration owns the economy from today on, or actually from yesterday afternoon at 3 p.m.
Well, I mean, I think, haven't they owned the economy since they walked
not
in?
Not according to them. They were still talking about Bidenomics. Not anymore, folks. This is your thing. So all those Trump voters out there, understand that. That argument goes away as of 3 p.m. yesterday in Washington, D.C. in the Rose Garden. That's now his economy. And if it tanks, that's where you point your finger.
One question I wish we would have asked Todd is how long, like, is there irreparable harm? Because, you know, there's an unpredictability with President Trump that we all know, right? That he could change his mind in a week from now. But if the introduction of this alone how much harm that causes. And the thing that I always think about is, while the recession, a recession, is terrible for most of us, every recession, there are some people who get very wealthy off of that recession by, sure, by being able to buy stocks low, by being able to buy property low.
The super rich will
get
they'll take
richer.
Advantage.
And we have now, I think I saw a headline this morning that said we are now past 3,000 billionaires, which that not so long ago was a lot less than that.
Yeah, like a handful.
Like just a handful. Yeah. Well, speaking of which, since we did an episode of You Need to Listen on billionaires, we had a new episode that dropped this morning.
We did, and it's a really good one. And if any of you out there have watched the Netflix series Adolescence, it sort of taps into that. And we're talking about bad parenting and like the implications
of parenting. Well, more specifically, we're talking about when is bad parenting not a crime?
Absolutely.
Because we've seen certain situations, we've talked about it on this show, when unintentional shootings happen in the home. In mm-hmm. Milwaukee County, it's charged as a felony. In other counties, it's not. It's a misdemeanor. We've seen in Michigan, the parents who are now serving a sentence,
the Crumblies,
mm-hmm. for their son's actions with their guns. But then on the flip side, we have other kind of negligent parenting that's not a crime. And so trying to talk about when it comes to your child and what they do or don't do, what responsibility do parents have?
This might be the best episode. It's our sixth that we've done, and this might be our best. Just from the feedback I've gotten internally already, this is obviously a hot-button topic for all the reasons you just suggested. But I think we look at this as something, if we don't fix this, all the things we talk about, school shootings, incident, accidental shootings, kids being denied health care, all those things are going to be even more important and more deadly in the future if we don't fix the parenting question. How much?
Well, what is? How do you legislate
yes,
parenting?
Yes, yes. I mean, this is something we got to talk
without
about.
Without it being governmental overreach.
Big question that we have to face head on, especially in the era of social media and all the other crazy stuff, unlimited access to everything, including pornography among very young people. Those are scary things for parents. I'm not saying it's easy and it only gets harder, but we gotta face that stuff head on.
Absolutely. So if you would like to listen to our newest episode that dropped this morning, you can text LISTEN to the Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line, 855-616-1620. Text LISTEN to 855-616-1620, and we will send you the link to our show. And if you like it, review it. You know, put a review on there. Subscribe. Send it to your friends.
There's a giveaway next fall for on our podcast. You know of this?
No.
Oh, I'll surprise you with that later.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. Well, when we come back, action, Wisconsin. It's been a year since we talked about tax incentives for films. So we're going to talk about that after ABC News and local headlines. Welcome back to Spanning the State. All right, what do Public Enemies, Bridesmaids, Major League, Mr. 3000, what do all of these movies have in common, Steve?
Good movies.
Yes.
I know the answers. Want me to say the answer?
Sure.
Shot in Wisconsin.
Partially shot in Wisconsin, yes. But it has been a minute since Hollywood was incentivized.
And what was the last Bridesmaids, maybe? The last one that shot here. Big one.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, maybe our guests would be able to answer that question.
That was mainly L.A., Bridesmaids.
But there's nothing that was shot here?
Yeah, there was one street scene.
Maybe like an exterior shot.
But nothing that was significant. All right. So we talked about this a year ago, but we have invited back the dedicated group of filmmakers and creatives who are working to change how Wisconsin handles tax incentives for the film industry and wants to bring them back. So a year ago, we had Suzanne Gerva here, who's a Wisconsin filmmaker and part of Action Wisconsin. And we're now inviting Nathan Deming back. You were most recently here with your movie for February, mm-hmm. but yeah. I did not realize that you're also part of Action Wisconsin. So very happy to have you both here. So let's just talk. I think when we had you on last year, Suzanne, we were one of five states that doesn't have a dedicated film office, and we were one in 10 that doesn't offer any kind of production incentives for filmmakers. Is that still the case, or is there other states that have moved in this last year while we have not?
Yes, there are other states that have moved, have been making moves,
okay.
but we have not. We are now one of three states without a film office, and Minnesota has really increased their film tax incentives, and they're doing a lot of production, And we are one of 13 states now without film tax incentives.
Why? I guess why? I mean, it seems like an obvious plus for the state, the promotion aspects of the PR and the fact that you're bringing some more economic incentives for local businesses, too. I mean, why not?
Good question, right, Nathan?
Yeah, well, I think it became a punching bag about 15 years ago when we had these before, but they were much weaker. And it was around the time, I think, where Hollywood and states were figuring out how to do this in a way that benefited the state. So since then, like states like Georgia, New Mexico, they built really strong incentive programs mm-hmm. that have just exploded. Like, look at New Mexico. Go to their New Mexico Film Office website. Oppenheimer shot there. Over the 2010s had, like, you know, Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, yeah. you know. So
it's sort of like if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. They do, right? Because yeah. it's so expensive to film in L.A. Yeah. now. I forgot, like, it's cheaper to film overseas sometimes. I don't mean overseas, yeah. like, go up to Canada and Vancouver. Like film in Europe than it Absolutely. Is to film in Los Angeles these days.
I was in London about a month ago, and it's booming there. And Ireland is booming, too. And, in fact, a small county in Ireland, Cork County, is the home to a Rob Lowe reality game show where it's easier to bring over 100 Americans and shoot there than to shoot that show in downtown L.A.
So, all right. Insane. So one of the other things that has moved forward since we had you on last year is that Governor Evers actually did address this in his budget proposal. So what is he proposing?
He is in support in the budget of the film office, which is very good. Excellent. And film tax incentives. And the tax incentives, we're still jostling back and forth on the percentages, but to have the tax incentives cover vendors, crew, all the sorts of people that we need to shoot.
All right. Politics is a two-way street, mm-hmm. primarily. Republicans, Democrats, liberals, conservatives. I'm not going to ask you that question. What do we have to do to make, I would understand, conservatives, Republicans understand that this is an important economic piece of the vitality of the state of Wisconsin? What do we need to do? We talked to all these people. I talked to them on my show. I mean, this is something I really wasn't that aware of, but it seems like a no-brainer to me, given all the potential positives that result from filming and making movies or anything.
Really. Also just a great advertisement yes. for Wisconsin, right? We saw what having Top Chef here did.
Top Chef brought in $5 million to hotels in Milwaukee and Madison.
So we have examples of what can happen here. So, I mean, who do we need to work on to make this happen? Governor Evers is on board. Republicans, my Republican friends, what are you doing, I guess?
Honestly, I think we just need to get the word out there because it seems like people still aren't aware that this is happening now. Like, this is a possibility yes. now. There's, like, 4 budget hearings, right, Suzanne, over the next yes. month where people can show up. And it's for the whole state budget, but people can come out in support of this. And when you were talking about February, I went to, like, 30 cities around yeah. Wisconsin. And, like, part of that turned into just a town hall for this. I was talking about film incentives. I was prepared to have a discussion or just like I was prepared for debate. I got nothing. Everybody was super positive and super interested once they found out about it. Because I think people just don't know about how filmmaking works. And it is complicated. I mean, I hear tax incentives. I'm like, what are you talking about? But it's the economy of filmmaking now. Like states around the country, countries around the world, this is how they make films now is with these incentives. And we're just losing a game we're not playing, which stinks because we have tons of filmmaking talent yeah. come from here. Some of the greatest yeah. directors ever came from here. Yep. Some of the top acting talent in the world currently is from here. Mark Ruffalo, Willem Dafoe. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. And it's
that's
just,
like top 5 those guys right in the world, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they yeah. had to leave. Well, they left because they made it huge. But, you know, but also, we were talking about every year there's hundreds of graduates who just leave.
I mean, UWM has an unbelievable film school.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah we're producing 500 to 600 really great, talented filmmakers, and they all have to leave. And it's going back to why would anybody be against it? I think it's what Nathan said. Don't understand. A studio won't come here unless there's tax incentives because the other states have tax incentives. And a studio doesn't know what is here in Wisconsin. But any place in Wisconsin can be a location. Because the florist shop, the grocery mm-hmm. store, the catering, the restaurant, the hotel, all those people are part of the film economy because you have to spend money to produce a film anywhere you go.
So I feel like I do understand tax incentives, but what would a film office do?
The film office is kind of like your first step. So if I'm a producer in LA and I want to know where I want to shoot, literally, because I was a studio exec, you go to the film offices and you look at locations. the locations that are there. Okay. The crews are there. The equipment, what's there? Where are the permits living? It's the first PR and press for shooting in Wisconsin.
Got it.
And it's kind of like then when the incentives come in, the lines have to be qualified, meaning you have to prove that you shot in Wisconsin, you used a Wisconsin vendor with a Wisconsin ID and yada, yada, yada. And then you get that 30% back. And that's the film commissioner in the film office that qualifies that. And then you get your money. So it's very important to have a film office.
Office as well. All right. So you guys are going to go to some of these joint finance committee hearings, correct?
Absolutely. Tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. I guess I'm lining up.
That's an early wake up.
So as far as anyone who's listening who also feels like this is a good thing to get behind, what do you recommend that they either more information to go learn about it or what they can be doing?
Please go visit your state legislator and say you want these. Please go to actionwi.org and send a letter to your legislator. It's easy, 1, 2, 3. You can get it done in less than a minute. Come tomorrow to the Joint Finance Committee public hearing, and they want to know.
Where is it?
It's at State Fair Park. Is that a called park? Yes.
Yeah. Easy.
Yes. Very easy. And we're lining up a bunch of filmmakers. We're working with Create Wisconsin, and we're working with Imagine MKE, and they're going to be there, too, to say you can't have an economy that's working and thriving without the creative economy working for you. You can't, you know, my husband worked at a place that Steve knows, and it's hard for him to get engineers here if you don't have the creative economy here, too. It doesn't make sense not to build this.
Absolutely.
And I would say if you're a filmmaker in LA or if you're in a film crew, if you're a makeup artist, if you're a G&E, like consider ways to reach out to us and get involved with Action Wisconsin because I think this could be something we all do together moving forward for the whole state, like a little Wisconsin Hollywood or something, you know, but let's get connected. Because this is our future. I mean, 10 years ago, I finished film school and I couldn't stay here. And I don't want that to happen for the future generations. And if we work together now, consider ways we can give back now and not just run down to Chicago for jobs or, you know, LA. Or
what's the website again?
ActionWI.org.
Can I get a cool t-shirt?
And
on
Charlie Barron's fan favorite, big part of this. His face is on the website.
Yeah. Yes, he's on the website. He will be other places too. And also follow our social media posts. And you'll see, I think this week, Ethan Hawke is going to drop with his support.
Ruffalo gave his support.
Scott Frank, awesome. Queen's Gambit, he wants to shoot here, another episodic series for Netflix. So we're dropping the big names.
So there's people who already want to come. They're just waiting for some movement here.
They can't get movement with the studios.
I think they call that lighting a fire under some people in Madison.
All right, and then quickly, a quick plug for another movie that was filmed in Wisconsin, February. It's last Wisconsin screening. When is it, Nathan?
It's this Saturday, 2:30 p.m. Beloit International Film Festival. Thanks for the shout
out. Perfect.
Absolutely. Name of a movie too.
He'll tell you about it off. It's really cool. He's doing a whole anthology every month, filmed in Wisconsin.
I am curious.
All right, Nathan Deming, Suzanne Gerva. Thank you so much for staying for being with us today. All right, we'll be back after this.
Thank you.
Welcome back. All right. So I had this realization yesterday.
Yes.
And back in January, as we were looking down the barrel of a TikTok ban, and I think it's no surprise to anyone who listens to this show that's TikTok and social media is a little bit of my bread and butter. And back in January, I was a little bit more verklempt about TikTok coming to an end for a variety of reasons. But then I've been heads down. I've been working on the show. I've been working on a bunch of different things. Obviously, we just got done with the Supreme Court election. And then I realized yesterday that the 75-day extension that Trump gave on his very first day in office is up on Saturday. And I thought, I was like, wait, are we doing this all again? Are we doing the countdown to TikTok going dark this Saturday again? And is there going to be the same emotional reaction that there was last time? Or is everyone kind of like, well, I don't know.
Isn't that like a lot of stories?
Is it kind of like fool me once, fool me twice? You can't fool me twice.
I think the question is Amazon going to come to the rescue?
I don't think that's the question. I think the question is, does ByteDance sell to anybody?
Well, they have, don't they have to? That's what the Congress said.
No, they also can just not be in the U.S. We're only like 18% of their business.
Yes, and that would make you more upset than it would make me because I'm not on TikTok.
But this time around, the only thing that's funny to me now, because I was actually fully prepared as I've invested in different platforms. I'm like, if TikTok goes away, it's not the end of the world. But it was funny because I had some of my videos about the Supreme Court election performed very well, and I have like 1,000 new followers on TikTok this last week. So now it's like, do I have to do this whole thing again of get on there and try to get them to follow me on other channels and yada, yada, yada. So I actually don't think I care as much as I cared back in January. But it is interesting to see, because as of right now, how the law is written, the president, whoever it was, whether it was going to be Kamala Harris or President Trump, could only make that extension if there was an imminent deal.
Right.
There clearly was not an imminent deal when he made this first extension.
You think?
So we're here. He could extend it, but is that legal? I don't know.
It doesn't matter to this president. He can do whatever he wants. And basically, everyone's afraid of him, so they're not going to do anything in response.
And so the interesting thing that seems like a loophole is letting TikTok's, it's owned, ByteDance is owned by the Chinese government. So if they would lease the algorithm to a U.S. company, so it's not like, so the company that is running TikTok in the United States doesn't own the algorithm, they're leasing the algorithm. Now the question is, how much resistance from China hawks in the U.S. would that loophole create? But it is a suggestion that's out there.
I think there could be a savior at the last moment. I think TikTok would like to stay in the United States as a sort of one of those choices that people could make when they're choosing their social media platform. And I at the risk of offending even more people today than I've already have, because I called the president a twit this morning on economics, and certainly
what's the definition of a twit?
Somebody who doesn't understand the concept that they're trying to change or trying to act on. And I would say the president also has no understanding of this issue in any serious way. And to have him be the arbiter of whatever happens is stupid. And just as much as he's a twit on economics and tariffs, he's equally that way in terms of social media. He's a great poster, but I understand that he doesn't even make his own posts. He says things and they type them in for him.
Someone else is capitalizing all those words?
Have you seen these pictures?
No.
He's got assistants that they basically type it up for him.
Like what he's just transcribing the things that he pronounces.
And then the servants serve.
All right. Well, I guess we'll have to see.
Are you worried about it?
Worried? No. Feeling like maybe tomorrow I should put some kind of post out there. Like, these are all the other places I am.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I should probably do, but how that algorithm works, how many people will actually see it, I don't know. But will we wake up Sunday like we did before and it'll just be gone, and then 14 hours later it'll be back again? I guess we'll see.
And I'm not throwing smoke, but if you don't follow my teammate here, Kristen Bry, she's sensational on social media.
You know, we do what we can. All right. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we will spin around the state on Spanning the State.